If you enjoy this podcast, please like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram and visit our website at lifebetweenthevines.com.
This podcast is sponsored by Release Winery. Join us as the story of this ultra-limited wine continues. Learn more at releasewinery.com.
Look, we can all make wine, Ray. It's not an issue. But can we make a wine that's true to type, that represents that family, that person, their prowess over, you know, 30, 40 vintages? And when I go down to the bunker and I've got 15 years, that's the wine I'm going to be taking.
And it was never the goal to make gobs of money. It was a goal, if you would, a quest to make great wine.
Discovering and tasting wine shouldn't be a homework assignment. And we believe that the people who are closest to wine have the best stories. So open a bottle.
And welcome to podcast number 486. This week we feature Catherine Darris and David Sokol of Katya Vineyards Restaurant in Ocala, Florida. On a trip to Ocala, Florida back in April of 2021, I happened upon Sokol Vineyards, which eventually led me to Katya Vineyards Restaurant in downtown Ocala. For those of you who are not familiar with this part of Florida, Ocala is regarded as the horse capital of the U.S. You can drive for miles along country roads and pass incredibly beautiful ranches for as far as the eye can see. Catherine Darris, or Katya, along with her parents David and Patricia Sokol, are owners of the restaurant and winery, which operates in a very special way. Once again, it's all about family. Listen to Katya and David tell their story. You can hear Katya on our Vino Lingo segment defining the term bougie swirl.
Sorry, Catherine, I'll call you Katya, you know, because we've become close personal friends in this short period of time.
Surprise.
Well, it's time to come back to Florida. Great to be back here. We are in the city of Ocala, and we are at the restaurant called Katya Vineyards. And I am here with Katya herself, better known as Catherine Darris, and I'm here with her dad, David. Not Darris, but David Sokol. How are you both doing today?
Good, thank you.
Thank you very much for being on the podcast. I appreciate it. First things first, this is a beautiful restaurant. We're right here in downtown Ocala. For those who don't know Ocala, this is kind of central Florida, I guess you'd say, right?
North central Florida.
North central. Horse country.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Which many people know that as. And a cool little downtown. How long have you been here at the restaurant? How long has the restaurant been here? Let's start with that.
It will be, oh my gosh, it'll be 5 years in July. But we didn't start as a restaurant. So we started just with cheese boards. And then we became a full restaurant in February of 2018. When my now husband came over as the chef. So it'll be a full restaurant 5 years this coming February.
Excellent. And of course, this all had its roots. There's a little wine pun there. Thank you very much.
No fun.
Yes, thank you. And that started with the vineyard itself, with the wine business, correct? Which was your part, David.
That's correct. Patricia, my wife, and I retired a second time. And we talked to Catherine at the time. We said, you know, we can either build a house that you're not going to like and want to sell when we pass away, and we're going to buy a car that won't be worth anything in a few years. But there are other things we'd like to do. And Catherine said, well, you know, we've always planted grapes wherever we've been. We worked with Louis Jardin at the Biltmore House when he was back in the 80s when he was the winemaker there. He actually, I would suggest that Louis Jardin at the Biltmore House actually started the Eastern Seaboard in all of its winemaking. He was just so good. We had a chance to work with him with his vats and in the vineyard and other locations as well. So when we came here, Catherine and we all decided we would plant. And in 2010, we purchased our vineyard land, which is beautiful land, perfect for what we're doing. We first planted muscadines, and we decided against that. Because
Mom did. She doesn't like.
She doesn't like the muscadines.
She signs our paychecks, so we said yes.
So she's a smart woman.
Tell her that, please. We planted hybrids instead, and we planted a red, which is known as Lenoir, and we planted a white that looks like a Chardonnay cluster. It came out of the University of Florida, mm-hmm. And so our whites. Mm-hmm. We have two whites that are made out of Blanc de Bois, and all seven of our reds, their base wine that we use is Lenoir. In Texas, it's known as Black Spanish. But it's the same rootstock that was sent back to France in the 18th century to save the French wine industry. It was the Lenoir rootstock that they grafted all of the French onto to save the industry. So it has a long history. It came to America from Europe a long time ago, and then it was sent back to Europe to save the French industry as well. So it's been a very good wine. It takes a little care, but it makes a gorgeous wine.
It's nice that we've taken care of them because they've taken care of us.
That's
too.
Exactly
yeah.
right.
Yeah.
Catherine, that's interesting you say that, because Catherine was a professional ballerina on stage for years. She trained all of her
really?
Life to be a ballerina.
A long time ago.
Off stage, she falls off her shoes.
There's a joke in the restaurant, if you hear glass breaking, everyone goes, "Cat?" And I'm like, "I'm okay, I'm okay."
Well, that kind of name, that name really goes with the ballet too, doesn't it?
It does, yes. Yeah. I was meant to be.
Catherine trained from the time she was 5 years of age all the way through high school and then college. She went to the conservatory for 2 years and then FSU and graduated from there. But at 5 years of age, she turned around to us. We were at Butler University watching a ballet, and she turned to us after standing there for 3 hours, mesmerized. She turned around to my wife and said, "That's what I want to do."
Yeah.
That's all she did. She did homework, ballet. I don't think you dated. I mean, it was just...
Ew, no.
No. So she was a professional on stage for a long time, got hurt. But she also was asked to go to China, and she taught in China, in Shenzhen, actually Nanchang, Shenzhen, and Hong Kong. The reason that they asked her to go to China, and I'll mention one other thing because I know this is, except I think it has helped her with her sommelier training and the wine and the restaurant business, is that she was brought to China partly because the Chinese train very well. They're technically perfect, but they don't emote. Mm. Catherine would make you on stage, she would make people cry. And when
not
she was,
from laughter.
No, when she had a dying scene, you could hear people whimpering in the front. So she was brought over, and they gave her much face because they not only let her teach the only tall, blue-eyed blonde in the area, but they also said, we're going to open a brand new teaching facility in Shenzhen, which is right across from Hong Kong. And they gave her much face because not only did they let her name it, but they made her the principal trainer. And when you walk in and you see all of the gorgeous chandeliers, it's her picture that you see.
Oh,
when you walk
my gosh.
In.
Wow, what
so
an honor.
She won't tell you this, but it's partly what she is able to do here, all of the ability to talk to people, et cetera. So. And then when it was time to do all of this, she's also
now
got
I drink wine for a living.
Yeah.
Not mad.
No. I wouldn't feel bad about that at all.
But the discipline that came with that is what I was getting to is really wonderful when you come to this business because she's highly disciplined and et cetera. It's just natural to do
well,
that.
Especially the restaurant business, absolutely, yeah. Especially when you're surrounded with food and wine.
Yes.
Having discipline is a good thing.
It's a rough life.
Yeah, it's terrible. So I was going to start the conversation, and this probably won't make the tape, but you have the best, absolutely best toilet paper roll dispenser in the
world. Isn't that cute? Amazon.
Get out of here.
Anything that's cute is mostly from Amazon.
I figured you had hired somebody to do this.
No, okay.
Is it artisan from Amazon?
Yes, that's a better answer. That's a much better answer. Okay, so back to the serious part of the interview, because one thing we know about wine is very serious. Something we're not here. We're about fun, and wine should be fun. But I want to kind of go back, but before I do, real quickly, you are both sommeliers. Is that correct? Certified?
We're both having our test in September.
Oh, okay, great. Well, that's kind of changing your social life a bit, doesn't it?
I mean, yes, completely. Yes,
we're studying together.
Yes, that's great.
Yeah, we're studying with a master course sommelier. So, and Catherine is just amazing already. So I know she won't have a problem.
Well, I like to drink wine; it helps.
Yeah, that's a good start. Yeah.
But we'll be the father daughter sommelier team.
That's great. Well, I'm going to give you a pre congratulations. I hope all goes well. Knock on wood and all that sort of thing. But it's pretty exciting to become a sommelier. Is an incredibly intense effort. To learn countries, regions. I've been around people like this for many a year, and it fascinates me. So hats off to you, but the time it takes It's you're running a restaurant here. How do you find that time?
Well, it helps that we're surrounded by it all the time. So it's not like we're in the medical field and now we're going to go try to do this. It's the language is it's always around us, and we're fascinated by it. So that also helps. You know, you're not bored by what you're learning about. You actually have this hunger for it, and you get to taste wine. So
once again.
People always ask me, how do you taste all these different things? And I liken it a lot to ballet. It actually helps me explain to people. You train your palate, so you learn how to pick up flavor profiles. And it's just acquiring knowledge and what those flavors taste like on your palate and how you can then express them. It's just like training for dance or for any other discipline. You just have to learn.
And it's interesting because I'll see you at a table and just say, well, you know, it tastes like a pirouette. And I'm going,
I do not say
what
that.
What is that?
No, my friends joke because I'll say something like, if something is very has a very almost like a eucalyptus, I'll say it tastes like you're walking through Marin Forest in San Francisco, and my girlfriend goes, "Damn it, you're right!" And so to me, when I taste things, I almost see pictures, and because smell is of course the highest, memory, so I get memories. That way.
And we're very blessed in the sense that Catherine is one of those 5 percenters. She has more.
No, I'm not.
More olfactory capabilities than most of us. So in that case, she can taste much more than I can. She can sense much more than I can.
Well, congratulations.
Thanks.
That's a pretty amazing accomplishment in life. I want to go on down this path about being a sommelier. First of all, having a restaurant, your own restaurant, and being a somm makes a great difference because you're there to help the guests, and that's what a somm's job really is. I'm going to ask you very specifically, Catherine, in this case, when you have a guest who's really challenged and fearful, and we mentioned this before the interview, but yet they don't show that, and they simply want just some good advice, good information. Is there a tell? Do you know what I mean when I say it?
Usually it's the Bambi look. No, I'm just kidding. we have a very beautiful restaurant. We call it fine dining. We're all dressed in coats and very well put together. And so when people come in and they see this 273 bottle wine list, and they kind of get overwhelmed. And even those who know their wines get overwhelmed. And so I just remind people, the best wine is the wine that you like to drink. It's okay. If you like sweet wine, then that's going to be the best choice for you. Hey, let me pick the best one for you. Let me help you find what you want to have. And other people, you just remind them, it's by country, it's by this, but what are you looking to eat? Because wine is meant to be with food. Wine, that's what, when I kind of compare between America and Europe wines are meant to be enjoyed mostly with food. That's why they originally were developed. And American wines, especially California Cabernets, are very ego-forward wines. It's about me and I'm the cabinet. Da, 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 da. So it's what experience you want, but in the end, it's just going to be a good glass of wine, and it's okay. It's just a glass of wine.
So it's an agricultural product.
Exactly. And once you and we try to do a very warm approach. You know, I'm not very stoic, you can tell. I'm not a very stoic person. I try to really read the table. I joke around with them, and I kind of educate them in a very gentle way. And even those who know exactly what they're talking about, they feel more comfortable. Once you make the patron feel comfortable, then they're willing to, their wall comes down, and they're willing to learn and hear.
And the one thing that Catherine does, too, is that I've noticed that when folks come back, particularly the ones that have been here the first time, maybe, and they're still a little reticent to pick a wine, when they come back, they'll say, well, you know, Kat knows what I like. And they could you look at Kat?
Like, oh, shoot. What did they drink? I had to remember real quick.
Oh, man. That could really be rough.
Yeah. I'm doing pretty good, though.
Yeah, what have I got written down on my sleeve?
Well, I trained them. I was like, take a picture of the bottle.
Yeah, right.
So I had to learn how to tell my... Because my storage capacity was going a little high, so...
I certainly get that. You do get a certain degree of groupies, but you also get people that are relying on you so much. And they... Let's face it. Guests in a restaurant want... to know, feel like they know what they're talking about. They really want to hold on to you there, don't they?
Yes.
Yeah. I set that question up so terribly.
That's okay. Well, it is a responsibility. You know, when you own a restaurant like this and when you're training to become a sommelier, you are accepting the responsibility of that patron's experience and how they, you know, you just want them to have a good time and enjoy. Food is meant to be shared and enjoyed, and wine is meant to enhance that. That's all that we're doing. You know, that's the bottom line of it. So the better that you can do that, that's what our goal is.
That's very good. It's a good answer. Now I'm going to go back in time again to your own experience, David, and wine. Was there a time, I always ask everybody this question, was there a time you discovered wine? Was there something somebody turned you on to? What got your attention where you said, there's something to this?
Well, actually, it was when I was first dating Catherine's mom. We went to a very, very good restaurant, and I realized that there was a Somme there. And I was talking with a sommelier at the time, and the recommendations based on the food, I thought was amazing. I was like everybody else. I would look on whatever shelf of the local store and try to pick something. And people normally, which is good marketing, people normally pick the label rather than the wine when they do that. And so you never really know, particularly those that are there and just getting something for dinner. They just pick something quickly. I was in that category at that time, and I was really impressed by this young man, and he was very soft, very kind, very. And then he would, what food did I want? At that point, Patricia and I started planting our own vineyards wherever we were, while we were out in higher education around the country, and that started to train me, and then I started working in some of the vineyards and in the wineries that were in the locale that we were in when I had the time to do that and be trained. And that's when I first began to realize that wine is a wonderful experience for anyone if they don't think that it's a challenge, that there's something so unique to this that I could never do it properly, or I get so embarrassed, etc. The other day, I was in a local grocery store, a high-end grocery store, and I had the coat on, and this young lady was standing next to all the wine counters. I was walking down the aisle, and she stopped me. She said, "Oh, you're from Katia. Pick me a wine that for dinner."
I didn't know that.
And I was going, "Well, what are you going to have?" And then we went through that, and we had a really nice conversation, the same conversation that Catherine mentioned, that the best wine is the one that you like. And if you want some ideas about food to go with that, there's nothing untoward about doing that at all.
Exactly. At all. Just because you don't like a Lafite Rothschild, you prefer Moscato, doesn't mean that you're not a wine drinker.
Yeah.
You know, that's what people need to understand.
Of course, it also depends on what your bank account's like, too.
That does help, yes.
Well, that actually brings up a really good question. People don't want to come to you and say, "I would like a glass of wine." Something that this means something I can afford. How do you read that?
As silly as it sounds, you read their demeanor. You read, I can't say you read what they're wearing, but you read sort of how they're taking everything in. I always ask people, you know, what do we typically like to enjoy at home, red or white? And I'll find out what grape varietal. And I'll say, okay, are we looking for a glass or a bottle? And if they say a bottle, I'll say, great. Are we thinking maybe in like the $60 range? Because that's a safe number. And if someone say, yeah, but it's a special occasion, or if they say, that sounds good, if there's a hesitant to that, then I know to go to a 40 or something. If that sounds good, I've got great wines at $60. But I can also maybe, if I know it's a special celebration and I can understand that maybe that would be their limit, I know exactly what wine to sell them. And it will blow their mind away, and they will feel so proud about that. You just have to really be as a sommelier, it is not your ego. It is not about you. It is about the people in front of you. So you have to take all that away and use your knowledge to read the person and see what they want and what they're going to enjoy. That's how we take it.
That's how we do it. As a matter of fact, there are several, Catherine's right. We have several younger people that come in now, and we've had two or three proposals here in the last six months.
Really?
Yeah,
nice.
People, yeah, proposing across the table, and you
we're peeking around the corner.
Yeah, either they're going to say something, or you see the young man, and they're very, you know, giddy, and they're sitting down, and maybe it's the first time. And then you realize, okay, we actually have several wines that are at a very good price point, but you can sense they've never been in a place like this before. Mm-hmm. And so we'll start at that end with a champagne that they probably buy the glass that they'll be happy with. It'd be gorgeous, but it won't break the bank, that kind of thing. And if you do that and they go, "No, I want a bottle of Dom Perignon," or something like that, then you know that it's different. But right. We always try to start where people more than likely are. And Catherine is right. We don't really, clothing is not the issue. Particularly in horse country, there's a difference. People that have huge farms here may come in a pair of jeans and an untucked sports shirt and buy your top wines. So you have to be very careful. As Catherine says, you have to sense their emotions when they come in. And thank heavens you've had all that training. So.
Well, a little bit of ESP, but most importantly, a lot of experience. When you are with these people, you're touching them to a degree. You're feeling out what they're like in a restaurant atmosphere, and especially when you're in fine dining. So.
And one of the things that we always say to them that I think, and Catherine is so good at this, and so is Patricia, her mom, when people come in and sit down and say, well, this is your first visit? Well, you're with us. Now you're family.
Nice.
Everybody that visits here is now family. You can call us anytime for any reason. And so let's talk about what you'd like to have tonight. At that point...
My husband does that too. So my husband's a chef. So he always tries to come out and talk to everybody. He's like,
every
is this your
table.
First time here? He goes, well, nice. Welcome home is what he says whenever they say that. And of course, he says in his cute little accent. Everybody's like, what? I'm just kidding. But, you know, it's the... We love what we do. And this is a very much a family business. So I always tell people it's fine dining, but not, you know, fine dining. It's like going to your very fancy aunt's house and having a gorgeous Sunday dinner. That's that kind of fine dining. Like we're still gonna make mistakes. We're not perfect, you know, but the food and the wine and the feeling that you get, that's what we're trying to really emulate.
Where's your husband from?
Born and raised in Honduras. And
cool.
San Pedro Sula, not a nice city to be raised in, but he came here when he was 18. He didn't speak any English, and he started as a dishwasher. He now, I forget that English is his second language all the time, except when he says check pay instead of paycheck. it's so cute.
Yeah, well, he also says chicken with head off, or
chicken
runs
with,
around like
chicken
a chicken
without head.
Chicken without head.
Now I always tell people he's lucky he's cute, but he is a really brilliant, good soul. And he started up as a dishwasher, and he just worked his way through restaurants, never any formal culinary training. He reads, he researches what other chefs are doing. He'll come to me, he'll wake me up sometimes at 4 a.m. with the most ridiculous idea. And sometimes I'll say, go back to bed. Or sometimes I'll say, in 2 hours I'll wake up again and we can talk about it. And it's like,
he's definitely into it then.
Oh, he loves what he does.
He's an artist. He's an artist.
He's lucky he's cute.
Yeah. I think you've said that before.
I'll say it again.
That's okay. Yeah. I hope he gets to hear this.
Yeah. Oh, he does. He knows.
He knows. Yeah, very cool. What I like about coming in here is it's very intimate. Not a lot of tables. Very warm atmosphere, and I could see this whole idea of family. So my compliments to what you've done here. I want to go back to the wine. Let's talk very specifically about the wines you're making, but where you're making them. You're making them at the vineyard, I'm assuming.
That is correct.
How far?
It's 24 miles to the northeast of here. Actually, if you're familiar with the Ocala area, anybody that might be seeing this podcast, is that the World Equestrian Center is being built up in the neck of the woods where we are. Also, the HITS, or the Horses in the Sun, the jumping competitions are there. As a matter of fact, we're between WEC. Our vineyard is between WEC and Horses in the Sun. It's all horse country up there, and we have 24 acres there that we use and plant. And the reason that we pick that land is that vines are very much like roses. They don't like their feet wet, and they will pass away very quickly if you water them too much, or there's too much water on them. So the real issue for wine growing anywhere is to find enough calcium or other even phosphates in the sandy loam that we have. But how close is the clay to the surface? Because clay works as a sink, and in many parts of Florida, it's very close to the surface, so the water stays there. When it rains, it puddles real quick. Mm-hmm. But we picked our land because it starts at about 18 inches on one side and slopes dramatically down to 80 inches on the other. So when it rains, it comes through the sandy loam and out. So in Florida, that's the first major issue. We also have to find, as in any winery or vineyard, the worst soil in the world, and there was cactus growing out there, and we thought, this is perfect. It's lousy soil. Wines will love it. So we brought that out, and it is a sandy loam. We have rocks protruding from the soil itself, too large to extract, but that, it does mean we have a lot of that capability that's very similar to a shale area in California, for example. So we picked that area and we planted the hybrids, and they worked out beautifully. We get large production from them. And we, most of our vintage, particularly the bottles that we make now, have a majority of that is our own. We have brought in some others like a Norton, which is is up from more in the Carolina area and Virginia area. We can't grow Norton here, and it's very difficult to make a good wine out of Norton. But we bring Norton in because it is an indigenous, basically, grape from the area. And we blend, and we also have a couple of others that we blend in with small amounts to make our blend. And we discovered that in order to do this well in Florida, you have to really pay attention to what you're doing. So we fractionalize. If I bring in, let's say I've got 500 gallons of juice, I'll fractionalize it into five different tanks. I'll ferment it with completely different yeasts and completely different support systems for the yeast. Then we'll bring it back together into one of our larger tanks, and then from there we'll let it settle. We do not use any, it's unfined and unfiltered. We only use gravity, we don't use chemicals. I refuse to do that because I don't want to drink it. So we do that. And then we put them in barrels for a period of time, and we select the barrels. The barrels are from Hungary. We used to get French barrels, but I found that it was hard to control what was happening in the French barrels, partly because it's the same Petraeus oak, but in France it's warmer, so it's more porous. And what they call tight grain in Hungary would be a loose grain. So in Hungary it is so brutally bad to grow those trees, it takes so long that the grain is super tight. And I can therefore control it. And we have one small barrel maker we always get from families. Mm-hmm. So they're one family. They have their own forest section, but they lease forest. The whole family is in cutting the trees, making the staves, curing the staves, and firing the staves, making the barrels and shipping it out, all the same family. They only have a small amount they do. And so we will actually go to them and say, I want the staves from this area, this area, this area. I want the heads fired. I don't want the heads fired. It depends on what I'm doing with that particular wine. And to be honest with you, all of that being said, it's because it's so difficult in Florida, even with the hybrids, to make a really good wine without really studying it. And it's taken us about 2 to 3 years to make our most recent two reds, the Winged Hussars, which is also part of the Slavic heritage we have. And it one tastes like a Southern Rhone and the other tastes like a Bordeaux. And it's taken us several years to get to that point and throwing a lot of wine out.
Actually. Yeah, that's a sad
thing. My mother's like, no.
Yeah.
The grass
but I mean, it's necessary. That's the thing.
It is. Yeah. Well, going back to when he says we planted, like, he's not kidding. So we put in the stanchions. He dropped one on my head by accident.
Oh, nice.
No. She bumped into it.
We did the wires. We are on our hands and knees, 793 vines by hand. Wow. Yes. It was a long day.
Yeah. Well, that's the, the romance and the glamour of the wine business, right?
Oh, yeah, there you go.
Everyone thinks it's just drinking wine and a sun-filled porch.
Sit
no,
by the pool, yeah.
I've had 50 gallons of wine because I forgot to turn off a valve once, and before I took off a hose, poof, purple people eater. Like, it was, I walked in, like, sticky, like this.
Every winemaker has that story, something like that, and when it's always lost wine, it just breaks your heart.
It was, Tony tells a story, because I was FaceTiming, he's like, okay, baby, I'll be home in like an hour or so, I'm almost done, click, I hang up, phew, the wine, I call him back, he goes, she was purple.
I was crying, that's a true story.
And my dad's laughing, I'm like, why are you laughing? It's
just, the good thing about these kind of mistakes is, A, you learn, and B, you'll
never
do it again.
I never did that again.
That's good.
I triple check every valve now.
Well, we have pictures on the larger tanks where Catherine's kind of hanging over, someone's holding on to her, and she's trying to rush the tank, and it's
well, and one of the bottom ones, because they're conical, so I'm trying to clean the bottom, and I toppled in, and Dad's laughing, not helping me out, taking pictures, my feet are, I'm like, excuse me. So we have fun.
That's good. Well, I mean, the wine business is fun. It's hard work. It's got its industrial side. It's got its people side, etc. So I'm telling you stuff that you don't know, I'm sure. So how many wines are you making as of today?
Right now, we have a total of 7 reds and 2 whites. And we've sold out of one, and we're about to sell out of our other vintage of another one. We named them after our family, but I'll get to that another time if you'd like. But we've sold out of one, so we're in the process now. I've got tanks that are full of juice now. Or wine now, and it's settling with gravity right now, and then we're going to be putting those into barrels, and then afterwards. Our wines, our most recent wines have won several awards. It takes us about, most Florida wines, If you're familiar with some of the sweet wines, it takes about 3 months to get to the shelf. It's a very quick process, sure. A very hot fermentation. We don't do that because people get headaches, not in what they think they get headaches from. They don't get it from the sulfites. They get it from the amines. And the amines are basically bad winemaking. You can have 10 to 100 times more amine in a bottle of wine if you try to force that wine to the market too quickly, and you use a very hot fermentation to get it done quickly. We bring our fermentations down just above where the yeast will die in cooling the tank down. So where it may take 7 days for somebody, it will take us 3 months to ferment. And at that point, we let it sit on the lees with gravity for another 6 to 9 months. Then we put it in barrels for another 2 years. Then we bring it back into the tanks for another year. So we don't even bring a wine out. It's already 3 years
We're
old.
We're leisurely winemakers.
Yeah. It's 3 years old when we bring it out.
That's what I always like to say. Banks look at you like, you know, do what?
Yeah.
And how?
The banks laugh at you. Yeah.
Yeah, not exactly what I would say, the best business plan in the world.
But once you get it out, and now you have product out, and we have it coming behind it, that's a different story. But as one of our bankers said, you have an awful lot of capital out there not earning anything right now.
So he's working on it.
Yeah. It's growing, literally. Yeah. Interesting thing, too, for wineries such as yourselves is when you sell out of wines, you have followers, and followers can turn quickly on you if you sell out too often, which is a weird little dichotomy.
We have a couple of wines, Vladimir, for example.
Our most popular wine.
Our most popular wine. It's won the most medals, the most recent being a gold in New York. And people love Vladimir. It's very much like a California, like a soft California cab.
Oak, vanilla, rounded stone fruits.
She tastes all that. And people love that. So we are getting that. We did quite a bit of bottling for that, but we're going to have to redo that this year to give it enough time to match the cases we produced. Nikolai we sold out of, and we didn't realize it was going to sell out that quickly. Now Vladimir was what my son, her brother, was going to name my grandson, and my daughter-in-law said, Vladimir the Impaler? No, that's not going to happen.
Kyle was most disappointed.
Yes, Kyle, her brother, said, oh, okay. So they named him Nikolai, another Slavic
Nikolai.
Name. Nikolai.
Say it right, Kathy will get mad.
I know, Nikolai. we brought out Nikolai for my grandson, and that sold out.
When he was little, he would come in and he goes, that's me! And I'm like, shh!
But we brought out Vladimir only to make my daughter-in-law angry.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Vladimir the Impaler.
She's
we said,
not
here,
that
this
sassy. Kyle goes, ho, ho, ho.
You could have just called the wine Dracula, but that still would have been bad.
Well, actually, we brought one in from Transylvania.
Oh, did you really?
We have two. We have a red and a white. It's like the vineyard's right underneath where Dracula's
castle.
So I'm like,
excellent.
So
wine.
What's in the soil?
this wine's really red.
It is a very deep red. It makes you think.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, quickly, we only bring in, except for a few that are out there, the iconic wines, there are a few of them are iconic. They come from big wineries in California. But we look for small wineries that are family-owned and operated. Everybody does everything, grandpa, grandma, kids, everybody like us. And we're finding that some of those wineries that are sometimes unknown are producing 97, 98 pointers. And they're gorgeous wines. So we're bringing, we search for family-owned, and we bring those in. And one of those is from Transylvania.
Nice. Transylvania wine. I like that.
It's called Dark Maiden.
Dark Maiden.
And what else would you call it?
Oh, yeah. And Royal Maiden.
And
I'm
Royal
like,
Maiden.
Oh.
It's after two of the maidens that the count, they disappeared.
Hey, what happened to them?
We don't ask questions.
Yeah, no questions. Yeah.
No questions are asked. The labels are pretty. The wine tastes good. Thank you very much.
Well, Katya, getting to you in terms of winemaking, as sommelier, are you involved with blending? Are you deeply involved with the wine process? Because I'm not sure where I'm at now.
My favorite day in the winery is what shall we blend this time day? And what that is what, as my dad says, all the fractionalization. So we go around and we see what, like how Vladimir was created was a blend. And we went around we've learned to mark our wine glasses like different levels because we'd forget. We also learned to video record because after the third tasting and blending of things, you kind of forget.
Sure. So, yeah.
The four of us, so my husband, my mother, and dad and I, we would go around and we would do different mixtures, and that's my favorite day. But I'm involved in a supportive capacity, and I am learning next to him. I'm a very good tank scrubber. I don't like heights, and they're really tall.
Oh,
I'm just like, it's really deep, and it's a whole thing.
Well, but that's where you start as a winemaker.
Exactly, and the bottling line and the labeler, and when it's bottling day, it's a bottling 12-hour day, yeah. And Mom keeps the wine going. She cooks us a big dinner afterwards, and then we go to bed. Nice. But to be my part in the winery is learning next to him and seeing what he does. And my forte is out in front of the people, but the art starts there. So you have to know, to really understand what you're selling and your craft, you have to start from the beginning. So.
And Catherine's very good at it.
And we haven't mentioned that people refer to you as Dr. Wine, which I didn't
oh, yes,
do that
persona.
In the introduction. Yes, so you have this, persona.
That's one of my things at the table. If I don't know the answer, I'm like, don't worry, Papa is here. The author of the wine list and Dr. Wine, I will send him right over. And they're like, ooh, and they get so excited.
Well, yeah, that's
I'm like, okay, I'll be back in 5 minutes, okay?
How many cases are you producing here?
At a time,
roughly.
We'll do cases in the winery right now. We probably have a few thousand in there, but we will never get above about 5,000 total cases. We don't produce that much of each of our products, and so what we'll do is enough that we can actually sell them here or online. Mm-hmm. We have no desire to go with any distributor or anything like that.
It's just the four of us. We wouldn't sleep.
Yeah, you know? I'm kidding.
We can't.
Well, yeah, but small is what a lot of our listeners look for, and
exactly.
That's a lot of the reason why
we are
why
very
I'm
much
here.
That boutique.
We care very much. Not only Catherine, I mean, takes care of everybody that comes into the restaurant, but we all, as a family, take care of each wine. As we're making it, the squabbles between us on taste, et cetera, I always defer to Catherine because Catherine has this ability to taste much more than the rest of the family. So I love it when we do that because I'll go, gosh, I taste plum and dark cherry. How about you? And Catherine will go, essence of strawberry, and there's a little bit of eucalyptus. And I'm going, okay, I'll write that down.
Yeah. Mom and Tony are like, it's great.
But I'm curious now. You know, descriptors are something I always find fascinating because one of the things we always talk about is you're going to enjoy what you're going to enjoy, and you will as well. It'll be different. Does it put somebody in a difficult position where they'll hear you say, oh, vanilla and saddle or whatever it might be, and, oh, yeah, I get that. Does that ever you feel?
If they don't taste it?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, and that's it goes to whenever I'm tasting with my friends who are big enophiles. They love wine, and that was where my girlfriend was like, oh, I hear it, I can see it. And I always say to tables and my friends, like, look, if you don't taste it, that's fine.
Yeah.
You know, you're enjoying the wine from your contextual experience of it, and I am enjoying it. And this is, you know, if I can give you information, maybe you can, it's like going back to training your palate kind of thing. I just have those experiences because I've drank a lot more wine, you know? And people's palate, every single palate is different. You can't say this is the only way that it's going to taste. That's not true, you know? So it's not, you tell people, don't worry.
Yeah.
If you taste this, this, and this, and then that is what you're tasting, and that's what that wine is giving you. Just because I taste this doesn't mean you're wrong.
What I like, what everybody likes, is when you meet people that are fun to be around and fun to talk to, and talking to both of you is really nice. I enjoy that attitude and the humor because, again, we don't want to have people take wine too seriously. But that being said, so I'm going to start with you, Katya. I'm sure you've done plenty of media. What's the one question that you've never been asked that you would like to be asked?
I guess nobody really asks what we do when we're not doing this. The answer is we do this anyways. when we're not, because this, to have a restaurant and to have a winery, you have to really want to know what you're getting into. We didn't. So strike one. Strike two, you have to really love what you're doing. And thankfully we got that one. We checked that. But it is exhausting. And so people never really ask, well, what is your downtime? What do you do? And for my husband and I, we like to go to restaurants. We like to see, because that's how he sees food, and I see how service is done, and we see wine lists, and we drag mom and dad along. I know that mom loves to cook at home, and they drink other wines that dad has found and brought in. And I guess that would be my answer.
I'm going to throw that to you, David. Dr. Wine.
Well, I think that that's probably the most important question, because if you walk into a restaurant or a winery anywhere and you go, oh, gee, that's very nice, and you guys knock off at 5 p.m. and go home to your family, well, yes, but guess what? The family's going to join you in the winery. We put in 12-hour days. We probably have a half a day, maybe one day a week that we do something together, but six, sometimes 7 days a week, it's 10, 12 hours a day. But we really love it. That's the issue. So it's not laborious. It's not a chore. The only way we get downtime is Catherine and Tony will say, you're coming with us. And we'll go,
yeah, we had to train mom and dad, because I'm disciplined. They're disciplined. That's where I got it from. They're very much, you know, we need to keep working. And Tony and I are like, no, we don't work this hard to just enjoy more working, you know? So we had to train them. We're going to go to the beach for a weekend. Daddy, it's your job to book it. And about once every 3 months, we'll go take a long weekend, the four of us, and we'll go to Clearwater, is one of our favorites. We have family down there, Ormond Beach, and just go away.
Yeah.
A change of scenery. Or we'll take them, like this Sunday, we're going to take my parents and very close friends of ours to dinner. And you're like, we're gonna go have dinner on a Sunday, and it's gonna be lovely. And are we gonna drink and eat? Yes, but we're not cleaning the dishes, darling. That's the most important part. But it's just the downtime is very important to enjoy, because that's what you're working so hard for anyway. Yeah.
You did hear her say that our downtime is 2 days every 3 months.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay.
Right.
We're working it. That's his downtime. Okay, we're working on it.
Because you are together all the time. Yeah, you got to have this time. You got to decompress. But I'm sure you didn't know that, so I thought I would tell you. So,
yes, thank you.
You know, my first curiosity is, obviously you have this fine dining restaurant, but there are people who simply want to go to a tasting. Do you accommodate that kind of thing in the restaurant here?
We used to, because we started out as a tasting room, and then we've evolved into this restaurant with my relationship with my husband and everything that we've kind of done to survive. So this is not what we intended to do. It's just a miraculous thing that happened. So we don't do formal tastings anymore, just because the focus has shifted to restaurant and wine with the food and that whole scenario. Now, if you come in and you want to try a few different things, oh, I'll get you tipsy, don't worry. Like, we will let you try things. Or I always say too, like, we'd still do wine flights. Anything by the glass, you can pick three things and we can always design that for you. And if there's anything you don't like, and if it comes to a glass of wine, something in the flight, a tasting, we always say, you won't hurt our feelings. You know, yeah. We'll trade it out.
Right.
And so it's still a tasting experience where you're not stuck with something. You can still adventure here. It's not, an adventure, I guess.
We will tell people that even if they order a bottle of wine and it's not what they expected, we will pull the wine.
Well, they have three chances to say no. Excuse me, sir.
Yes, that's true.
There you can't drink half and be like, me.
In a sommelier, you have three chances. One is the cork, the other is the taste, and finally the bottle. But
well, the bottle first.
The bottle, okay. We will try to.
We will try to
make sure that everybody feels comfortable. Just like we don't turn tables. When you come in as family, you wouldn't ask family to leave your home. So when people come in, we treat them as family. That's your table all night. We don't turn.
Tony says, we're not McDonald's. So.
No, I noticed that.
Yeah. I mean, we've got these arches, but they're not golden arches.
There you go, yeah. And you have a suit of armor, which is pretty rare.
Yes, that's Sir David. I've known him since I was nine. That's a whole. So he lived with my aunt, and he was next to a usually scantily clad mannequin with her arm around a jukebox at my aunt's house. So he would give me nightmares when I was nine.
This is starting to go weird, you know.
Yes. So welcome to the family. that's why we drink wine.
So. That's great.
Oh my gosh.
Well, I got to tell you, this has been a blast being able to talk to both of you. Wished you had a little bit of a sense of humor, but it's okay. You'll learn.
It's him. He's so dry.
Yeah. it's really very sad. But most importantly, for our listeners who would like to learn about Katya Vineyards and Katya Wines and what you do, what is your web address?
Web address is www.katyavineyards.com. Katia Vineyards with that S on the end, .com.
And if somebody would like to contact you for a reservation, how would
absolutely.
They do that?
Absolutely. It's area code 352-528-2675.
And in beautiful downtown Ocala, wine is being made, actually just outside in Ocala. And this has been great. David?
Thank you so much.
Thank you. We've had fun.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Ours too.
Learn more by visiting katiavineyards.com. Thanks for listening. Subscribe to the podcast at lifebetweenthevines.com or sign up to our YouTube channel. You can also follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Life Between the Vines comes to you from Fifth Floor Recording Company in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Produced and edited by Ray Pfister. Our host is Kay Pascoff. Our web geek is Dan Gieschen. Original music by Ray Pfister. Copyright 2022.